patriotism, faith, national unity, education, fiscal responsibility, civility, the values that define America. Fascinating stories and talks from America-loving patriots dedicated to preserving freedom, opportunity, and justice. Welcome to the Friends and Fellow Citizens Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 143 of Friends and Fellow Citizens. I'm your host, Sherman Tyloski. Thank you all so much for joining me for this Sacred Honor Series episode. We will be continuing with the Pennsylvania delegation. Before we get to the main character of this episode, make sure to subscribe to Friends and Fellow Citizens. If you enjoy this content, whether you're here for the first time, you've been here since episode one, welcome back, as always. And of course, a big shout out to our Patreon supporters. They are absolutely fantastic. Always have to really give them a shout out because they really mean a lot for each and every single episode of this program. If you'd like to be a Patreon member, contribute to our community, you can check out the link down the show notes below. We do have a new shipment of some merch, so if you join, you are eligible to receive a Friends and Fellow Citizens mug, and it's so special, I can't tell you enough about it. So be sure to check out the Patreon link down below the episode and get yourself a great beverage and a great vessel, of course, to hold that beverage for you with a Friends and Fellow Citizens mug. Also, we do have a new format for the newsletter, so if you've signed up recently, hopefully you're enjoying the new format. If you have any feedback, be sure to let me know. There is also a link down in the show notes below for a way to contact me to let me know what you think of the newsletter, any changes, anything that you have on your mind. That is a great place to start. With all that, let's get right into the episode about Dr. Benjamin Rush. Dr. Rush was born in 1745, actually born on Christmas Eve, so that's kind of quite interesting. He was born just outside of Philadelphia, and he had a bit of like a tale of two sides of his life. On the one hand, he sadly lost his father when he was quite a young age. His father was a gunsmith. Some people say he was a blacksmith, but anyway, one of those. He was very, very saddened, obviously, to have experienced this side. And I would think a lot of people obviously would struggle a lot in terms of the means to survive and to live. On the flip side, his mother was very successful at operating a shop, and in part because of the success of his mother, he was able to get a very decent education, attending what is now Princeton University. At that time, it's called the College of New Jersey. I like Princeton a little bit better just because there's got the name Prince in it, but anyway, that's just it's a great university, of course. That really developed his interest, obviously, in academics, and he got very interested in studying medicine. He traveled to Edinburgh, Scotland, where he studied at the University of Edinburgh. I've been to Edinburgh. It's actually a fantastic city to check out, so if you haven't gone to that part of the UK, I highly recommend it, and you can certainly browse through the rich history there, both Scottish history, but also some connections, of course, with the Founding Fathers. Dr. Rush earned his degree from the University of Edinburgh in 1768, degree of Doctor of Medicine, and he actually went to several hospitals around Europe as well. I'm not sure how extensive that trip was, but I'm sure it was a way for him to gain experience before he came back to Philadelphia. In 1769, he did return, and he started his own medical practice and became a chemistry professor at a university in Philadelphia. And he was just such a pioneer in a number of fields. It's hard to really pinpoint exactly what he was a pioneer of, just because he had so much involvement in different causes. He, first and foremost, was a medical doctor, so he pioneered medicine, particularly on psychiatry, on chemistry, and he really wanted to bring some of those into his activism and his involvement in politics. He was involved in education, involved in religious freedom. lot of different labels. We'll touch upon those a little bit more later in this episode. But just know that Rush was a very, very popular person, especially in that local area, people knowing him as such a great doctor. He actually practiced in Independence Hall, I believe, or at least in the vicinity of that area, and probably was a little bit surprised to find himself eventually signing the Declaration of Independence kind of in that same area too. Before I continue, I do want to acknowledge that a lot of this information and some really interesting facts have come from an interview from an NPR article interviewing a man named Stephen Fried, and he is an author, and he wrote a biography about Benjamin Rush. This book is called Rush, Revolution, Madness, and the Visionary Doctor Who Became a Founding Father. I've never read this book, but I intend to check it out when I can. So this is a good overview of who Rush was, and I'm curious to know a little bit more about what he was like. And so some of the things I'll be telling you about Dr. Rush stem from that book and really from that interview. One of the things that the author, Mr. Fried, mentions is how Rush's medical training actually helped shape the way he viewed politics. He was a doctor, but that doesn't mean that he was treating the most wealthy people at the time. And in fact, he actually treated a lot of poor patients. And when you're further down in the ladder, it comes to socioeconomics, he found that a lot of these people were of different ethnicities and different backgrounds. And he treated a lot of patients of all these different races. And that's one of the reasons why he eventually became a very staunch abolitionist, because he probably found that the people he was treating were essentially innately the same, that they were to be judged based on their values, not based on their skin color. He became a very, very vocal opponent of racial prejudice. This, of course, is very complicated, and as some of you may know, the issue of slavery was very complex because you had founding fathers from different parts of the colonies who had different interests, different ties to slavery, and so when they made these compromises, especially with the Constitutional Convention, it became a lot more of really getting down to things that nowadays we look and say, boy, it's just such an easy thing to just allow people to be free, but at the time, of course, we're dealing very different times here. That wasn't the case, and people did have to make compromises during a time of slavery. Rush was one to know a lot of different people. I mentioned that he was very well known. He wasn't just well known in Philadelphia, though. He was really well known among the founders, and not to say that the founders were in themselves an elite club that officially just can kind of gather around. Of course, people at the time mingled with people who were around their socioeconomic status, so it wasn't a surprise that a lot of these founders knew each other. An interesting fact I found from the website from the descendants of the signers of the Declaration of Independence was that Rush knew two people who've already covered so far. That's Richard Stockton and Dr. John Witherspoon. And apparently, when Rush was in Edinburgh, he helped convince Witherspoon to become president of the College of New Jersey. Witherspoon and Rush would likely have a lot of commonalities of how they viewed education as a vital resource, vital ingredient for survival and for just living in general. So it's not surprising to see him being involved with his good friend Richard Stockton, both of them helping convince Witherspoon to take on that kind of leadership position in education. Very big deal at the time, obviously. Rush also knew Stockton so well that he actually married his daughter, Julia Stockton. So Julia was only 17 years old when she married Benjamin Rush. And they eventually had 13 children. Four of them died in infancy, unfortunately, but that's still pretty remarkable how someone could have 13 children, but it was certainly not surprising for some of the founders at the time. Rush actually was not elected yet to represent Pennsylvania when he eventually came aboard in Congress. before then, though, he was already very much involved with the independence cause. He firmly believed in the independence cause for quite a few years. He wrote for papers. It says from the website here, he was active in the Sons of Liberty. One thing I was surprised about is that he recommended the Common Sense title for the pamphlet Common Sense, which I guess in itself is common sense too. But anyway, nonetheless, I was shocked by that. And I'm sure Thomas Paine was probably thinking, man, I should have thought of that too. But you're dealing with a doctor, so what can you do? So Rush was, again, one to continue with his service as advocacy for independence representing Pennsylvania. So he becomes the 25th signer to sign the Declaration of Independence. And he was one to know that it was a very tough time, and I certainly don't blame him. At this point, we've covered a number of different signers, and the common theme I hope people are taking from this is that signing the Declaration of Independence was just such a tough thing to do because it was really the difference between survival and death. If one was caught, especially in Philadelphia, where there were a lot of loyalists, which, I'm surprised that they chose Philadelphia to some degree because of the fact that there were so many loyalists, and it certainly probably wouldn't take much for a loyalist to show up at your house and try to do something. But nonetheless, this is, a decision on whether to support independence or put your life in jeopardy. And when I say life, I also mean family, I mean wealth. We're talking potentially the impact on generations. So this kind of impact, again, is really where I want to emphasize these points as we discuss the signers. Rush was very, very, very saddened to hear, of course, of his friend Richard Stockton to be captured by the British. And there's actually a quote here that I want to read to you just to bring home this point of how big of a deal it was for Stockton to be captured and to really be tortured by the British. He wrote, quote, "Every particle of my blood is electrified with revenge. And if justice cannot be done in him in any other way, I declare I will, in defiance of the authority of Congress, drive the first rascally Tory I meet 100 miles barefooted through the first deep snow that falls in our country," unquote. Just to kind of add it to the sense of how some of these founders thought about this capture of really one of their own, someone who was passionate about the independence movement. And I'm always wondering if I was a fly on the wall in Independence Hall, you know, seeing these signers come together, imperfect as they are, but they came with a lot of brilliance. But also, they probably left with a new sense of camaraderie. It's not to say that there weren't any politics involved. And in fact, Dr. Rush actually had a bit of a, it wasn't really a spat, it was really him complaining to Congress and really to George Washington about a doctor named Dr. Shippen. And unfortunately, Dr. William Shippen was still kept in his role, but it doesn't mean that the politics just disappeared after the signing. But I wonder how that feeling was like when the founders left Independence Hall to go back to their respective colonies. Really just with fingers crossed and a whole lot more on what was to happen in the years to come. Dr. Rush not only was involved in the independence movement, but also was very much involved in the war effort. He was the only signer to travel with the Continental Army as a medical doctor. He served with George Washington, obviously very close to Washington. Actually was with him, I believe, during the crossing of the Delaware River at the Battle of Trenton on his birthday, actually, December 24th, 1776. That was quite a birthday present. I'm not sure if Washington was really able to afford to give him anything else other than crossing an icy river and surprising the British troops at Trenton. And I'm sure the British prisoners did not wish him happy birthday after that battle. Let's go back to what Dr. Rush is doing to bring back medicine into his platform. So he and leaves Congress. He goes back to medicine, and he is the founder of the Pennsylvania Hospital, which is still around. I believe it's still run by the University of Pennsylvania, which obviously was founded by Benjamin Franklin, his friend. Rush also became president of the Philadelphia Medical Society, and this really leads to what he did, not just as a medical doctor, but as one to combine education and hygiene, I'd say, into the field of American history. Rush, according to Mr. Freed here, he did a lot of work for this Pennsylvania hospital, and it was the first one in the country. And Mr. Freed argues that this actually shaped his views on mental illness. At the time, people didn't really know how to treat mentally ill people. In fact, there was some kind of consensus, and I don't know if it's even scientific or if it's just people making things up, probably a combination of both. But people thought that if you were mentally ill, you couldn't feel heat or cold. And that just really puzzled me because, I mean, first of all, who comes up with that? But second of all, how can anyone just assume that heat and cold just has nothing to do with illness? I don't see where that connection is, but nonetheless, that was really how people felt, and that was how a lot of mentally ill people were treated. According to Freed, these mentally ill people, gosh, I mean, they were warehoused, they were locked, they were chained, they slept on the straw, they probably went through hell on earth and then some, given the fact that their minds are already hell on earth anyway. But that's what the scale of the problem was like. And as Dr. Rush was seeing this, I can't imagine what he was thinking and going through his mind. But we do know that he saw this as a huge problem. He wanted to elevate this not just as an issue, but as a medical issue. He understood that addiction is a problem, and it's a medical issue. You need to have medicine. You need to know what you're doing when you're a doctor. You can't just be making things up. And as a university professor, he was probably also cognizant that people need to learn. And if you're going to establish some kind of medical practice or any kind of medical profession in the United States, you need to know how to be the best doctor you could possibly be to save lives. And so he became a very, very staunch advocate for funding for mental illness and for, at that time, was alcoholism really was kind of the biggest addiction here, according to Mr. Freed's book. And Freed argues that the, quote, history of modern mental health care starts here in this building with Rush, unquote. And that building, of course, is referring to the Pennsylvania Hospital. Rush was also an example in his own city. I mentioned that he was very admired by people. And talk about putting your own skills into practice, because Philadelphia fortunately faced two big yellow fever epidemics. According to this figure here, almost 8,000 people died because of this epidemic. And in fact, he actually got yellow fever himself. And for him to do this kind of service, I think, is quite remarkable. And it's certainly an indication of the kind of person he was. Again, I don't think he's a perfect person. I don't think any of the founders are perfect. But nonetheless, we have to recognize the heroic efforts that people make, especially when people are suffering like that, when people didn't have the kind of modern medicine and medical advances we have nowadays, to do some of that, to be out in the field, to fight in a way, to battle within a battle around that time when the American Revolution was its own battle or its own series of battles. The battles on the Constitution, the battles on the Bill of Rights. I mean, the founding of the nation was really built on a lot of different conflicts, ideological, sometimes physical, but to fight in this battle as a medical doctor, possibly being one of the few ones in the whole city to be doing that, that is truly, truly an inspirational story. Rush, I mentioned, was a prominent advocate for the abolition of slavery. However, he did own one slave named William Grubber. And according to Free, we don't really know why he bought a slave. We do know that he You build a good relationship with him or with his with Grubber, and actually help fund for treatment, things like that. I'm just guessing here, and I don't have any evidence to back it up. But I wonder if it's maybe because this was a way for him to, in some sense, understand why slavery works the way it does. I mean, I just say that just as to entertain a possibility. But again, there's really no way of telling why. It certainly, of course, at that time, you know, conventionally it was all right to have slaves. But I'm curious to kind of see what that was like. And again, you know, slavery was a huge institution at the time, right? So it wasn't something completely different. Whether it was him maybe trying to get to know someone, I'm not sure. But this is, I think, it just shows the complexity of individuals. And I don't think that we need to apply. Again, this is one of the things that I don't agree with nowadays. A lot of people nowadays, which is this application of modern day standards to the past. It's not to justify all the bad things in the past. It's not to give a pass to anyone. It's the fact that we can't compare apples to oranges. And we'll talk a little bit later about some of those takeaways here of how we can learn from Benjamin Rush. But the point is that knowing these founders are very complex individuals, there hasn't been a mold that I've seen. There's certainly commonalities, right? People know people, so you're probably going to be involved in certain common interests or common activities. But we have to judge individuals based on who they are and recognize that sometimes, a lot of times actually, people are in their own contradictions. Just to keep that in mind here. Rush was such an impactful founder, not just one who knew a lot of people, but he really gave himself for the kind of service he believed in. I mentioned education. He was one, I'm sure, to be one of the first ones to pioneer public education. And it wouldn't be later on till Horace Mann and all those people who really started establishing more of that foundation for public education. But to see that someone this early in American history to be advocating for that, that's very, very important too. He advocated for education for women and for medical treatment for the poor. And I mentioned this idea of compassion because, you know, compassion is where I think we really need to do more work on. And he was one, I believe, to recognize that compassion and medical treatment is how we get people to get out of medical illness, to help the mentally ill get back on their feet. Rush's impact came so close that to all these founders that he was one to bridge two major founders who actually found themselves at odds with each other. That's John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. That famous feud between them, two people who used to be friends, but throughout the Washington administration, especially into the Adams administration, these two people really stopped writing and they stopped communicating with each other. And apparently, Dr. Benjamin Rush was one of the primary founders who helped bring these two together. I mean, what a touching story here. Imagine trying to do that nowadays, I mean, knowing how tough it is already to resolve differences with your friends and family. But imagine trying to reconcile two people who used to like each other, now they rival and bicker. Actually, probably not even to that point of bickering because they'd even talk to each other. That was the kind of impact that Rush had. Dr. Rush also had, of course, very, very close relationship with Benjamin Franklin. I won't discuss too much about Ben Franklin here because this will obviously be saved for the next episode, but just know that Rush was actually Ben Franklin's protege. He learned a lot from his fellow Pennsylvanian. That relationship probably was so valuable, especially when people were counting on these wiser minds. You know, Ben Franklin truly was one of the wisest minds in the Constitutional Convention, and of course, during the time of the deliberations on the Declaration of Independence. Anyone would want to really look up to Ben Franklin. Rush was one to live quite a long life. He was so involved in all these different activities. He was, of course, part of that movement with the federal constitution in the 1780s. And he was so well known that the Philadelphia Mint actually made a couple medals for him. He was involved with Dickinson College. He was part of the American Philosophical Society, co-founder and vice president of the Philadelphia Bible Society. So just, again, one of those founders who, for whatever, somehow, some way, just can fit a lot of things into his schedule. He lived quite a long life. Unfortunately, the typhus epidemic came about in Philadelphia in the early 1810s. And so Dr. Benjamin Rush passes away on April 19th, 1813, at the age of 68. His wife, Julia Stockton Rush, actually lived all the way till 1848. So she was almost 90 years old when she passed away. She lived quite a long life. No doubt that Dr. Rush gave her a lot of medical advice on how to survive for so long. I'd like to now read an excerpt from John Adams about Dr. Rush. Here's what he wrote. Quote, Dr. Rush was a greater and better man than Dr. Franklin. Yet Rush was always persecuted and Franklin always adored. Rush has done indefinitely more good to America than Franklin. Both had deserved a high rank among benefactors to their country and mankind, but Rush by far the highest. Unquote. I find this quote so fascinating because this is John Adams, I mean, a former president and one of the top founding fathers, sometimes forgotten, I would argue, but one of the top founding fathers, same Benjamin Rush was a bigger influence than Franklin. I'll leave it up to you to decide who you like better, Dr. Rush or Dr. Franklin. Maybe listen to the two episodes before you make that decision. The point here is that I think Rush could have had a lot of fame. He could have been up there with Ben Franklin in terms of popularity. He certainly was, I think, one to admire Franklin and try to emulate him to the best of his ability. I wonder how much of his obscurity is because he didn't want to be a self-proclaimed extension of Ben Franklin, because Ben Franklin passes away in 1790. So there's still another 23 years after Franklin's passing where Rush probably could have just said, you know, I am the new incarnation of Ben Franklin or something along the lines of that. To certainly one to probably know Franklin very, very well. I'm just curious about that, and I wonder how John Adams got to that decision to consider Dr. Rush as a bigger influence than Dr. Franklin. On the other side of this feud that eventually ended, Jefferson acknowledged that, quote, a better man than Rush could not have left us more benevolent, more learned, of finer genius, or more honest, unquote. Just hearing from these two sides, from two people who feuded so much, to have this kind of common reverence for this famous doctor, that I think says a lot about who Rush was and his impact on the biggest names of the founders whom we all admire. And it really is, it serves as a reminder for all of us that the founders we know so much, Washington, Jefferson, Adams, Franklin, a lot of these founders would not have been the people they were without others like Dr. Rush. And I hope that the episodes really highlight how each of these founders had their roles, both their perfections, but also their imperfections. This is all part of the necessary conversations we need to have about the founders in the future. So now I'd like to leave with a few takeaways for all of you to reflect on Dr. Benjamin Rush. The first is, you know, preaching compassion, which is what we see a lot nowadays, is not compassion. Helping others without regard for self is compassion. Think about the first responders in our society. The firefighter who goes into a burning building to save lives. Think about the police officer who has to patrol a dangerous neighborhood when that officer can be shot at, sadly, by a crazy person, by a person with no heart. Or the paramedics, the people who are rushing against time to try and save someone. Now, obviously, this is part of their professions, right? But you need to have a desire to do that. You need to have, I would think, for any first responder, for anyone who gives of themselves, knowing the risks to physical harm, knowing that whatever shift you go on, you might not be back home that the following shift. That, I think, is really something to look up to, I think, as a society. I also think that the way we have dealt with people in recent years, especially when it comes to mental health, has been nothing but a disaster overall. It's not to say that there aren't people trying to help, but I think as an electorate, I think we have not gotten to a point where we've recognized that we need compassion to help those who are mentally ill. I think about my time when I was living in the California Bay Area, and there's this whole perception of compassion that people need to help others. And this is something I saw all the time. And in principle, there's nothing wrong with that. But here's the problem. People really don't want to practice it. They walk past someone who's drugged up, who is homeless and not trying to work, not trying to make their own lives better at all, with terrible hygiene. People walk past it and they don't care. They think, oh, that's just normal. Or I guess we just have to put up with it. That's not compassion. Leaving people on the street and not caring for them is not compassion. But that's exactly where we've gone nowadays. Nowadays, these lifestyles here, nowadays it's experiencing homeless. I'm not even kidding here. I was driving with my parents one time in San Francisco. There was a sign. It was probably some kind of advertisement for what, maybe from one of the charities or even from the city's homelessness department, whatever that agency is called. It said, homelessness is an experience. And I thought to myself, how on earth can we turn homelessness and mental illness and all the related elements, drug addiction, how can we try and glorify these problems? It makes absolutely no sense, but that is exactly what has happened to a lot of places around America, and that is inherently wrong. We need to recognize what is compassion. Compassion is not leaving people on the street. Compassion is not accepting that as a normality. Imagine if Dr. Benjamin Rush said, you know what, it's okay if we just treat mentally ill people by chaining them up and just leave them out in the heat or the cold because they can't feel heat or cold. I mean, how outrageous would that be? He fought against that normalization that tried to occur when people were supposedly dealing with mentally ill patients. He said, no, we have to follow the science. We have to rely on medical explanations and on medical solutions to help these people. We need funding for mental institutions so that we can get these people treated. Nowadays, try finding a mental institution anywhere. So many of them have closed over the last decades. I think it's been one of the gravest mistakes we've made as a country. So if we want to bring back compassion, we have to practice it. And there's clear evidence of that with the people who are serving our communities. We just need to recognize them and appreciate them for what they do. And more importantly, learn from them. Try to do something that is worthwhile. I can tell you that I need to do better. I think we can all do better in trying to spread compassion in our societies today. The second is never forget the lessons you learned since your youth. This stems from the fact that Dr. Rush gained a lot of his perspectives based on his time when he was younger, whether it was through his medicine, whether through his profession, whether through his family, through his education. He took a lot of his lessons, and those really shaped the way he saw a lot of different causes and a lot of different issues. And I would argue that if we forget the past, if we forget the kinds of successes and mistakes we've made before, we are going to be lost individuals. I truly believe that we are a product of our different experiences. And it's not to, give a pass to the things that we did wrong. Or it's not to say that our experiences are the only narrative that we that exists in the world. It's to say that we need to own the things that we've done, and we need to let those help guide us. Whether it's someone who went to prison for smoking marijuana and came back out and be like, you know what, I'm going to do what I can to prevent people from smoking marijuana and ruining their lives. I want to go out there. I want to educate people about the dangers of smoking toxic substances and to make sure that we don't go down that path again as a society. We have to have avenues of forgiveness and of redemption here. And to one of those ways we do that is remembering the lessons and the things we learned. I remember when I was a child, one of the things you learn in school, especially when you're dealing with other kids and you're not really sure how to make friends or deal with the bullies or the people who just had a bad attitude on things. Well, the number one thing you always remember was that if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. Now, how often is this really practiced nowadays? Probably not as often as we want to. Just as a simple example of how the things we can learn, but also the opportunities maybe we miss, maybe those things can also help us to say, well, I didn't get those opportunities, but I want people who were my age to have those opportunities. The last thing is, and I say this as a metaphor here, but education is a medicine. I would argue it prevents us from catching what I call diseases. And I'm putting in quotes here because I'm not talking literal diseases here. I'm talking ignorance, prejudice, deceit, delusion. These kinds of diseases, in quotes, are things that could affect our behaviors, affects our livelihoods. It could really derail our paths, whether it's in our careers or our personal lives. But education is really where it begins. Education at home and at school. Nowadays, there are so many kids because of COVID, especially, are missing from schools. How do we account for them? Are they really getting that education they need back at home? And this really relates to Dr. Rush's advocacy for public education. I'm not sure what he envisioned exactly for public education, but I do believe that public education is not simply just giving free stuff. It's not just having systems where people have opportunities to just go to school. The quality of education has to matter. People need to be involved in education. It's not simply just like, well, let's just let the government do everything here. No, no, no. What happens if someone comes in and they want to politicize things even more than things are already politicized? These are the kinds of things we need to keep in mind when we consider education. We need to know that education is not just reading books or reading articles. I'll give you an example here. I've been doing readings, of course, for my courses and all that. And one thing that is always something in your mind is just how do you apply the kinds of things in that article to today? And I can tell you there are certainly a number of articles that couldn't really do that. Perhaps it's an experiment that someone does that you can't really replicate in this world. And it just made me think, nothing against the authors of those personally, but if I were to write an article, I want to make it applicable. I recently read an article that, I kid you not, I'm talking like a political science academic article published in an academic journal. And in the conclusion, the first paragraph actually mentioned George Washington. And I like to read a quote from that because I think it's really fascinating. And I need to learn more about these researchers who decided to make this decision to include George Washington's farewell address in here. The article basically finds evidence of this partisanship and this ideological label that people find within the Republican Party. Here, and this is the first sentence of the discussion part. It says, quote, "Writing of the spirit of party, George Washington, in his farewell address, claimed that, quote, this spirit, unfortunately, is inseparable from our nature, having its root in the strongest passions of the human mind, unquote, and that in popular governance we see its, quote, greatest rankness, unquote. Indeed, he clearly views the spirit as the, quote, enemy of popular government because he believes it will lead people to, quote, seek security and repose in the absolute power of an individual, unquote. Never have political scientists been able to provide as strong of a test of this claim until now. And I'll stop there because I was surprised to see that in an academic article, but I hope that this, something like this can, again, reappear in our education to connect back to George Washington, connect to those characters who, as imperfect as they were brilliant minds who pioneered and risked so much for our nation. And it's because of people like Dr. Benjamin Rush, we have a stronger nation that we perhaps have otherwise. Perhaps without him, we wouldn't even have a nation at all. So it requires, I think, some level of gratitude to people like Dr. Benjamin Rush. And with that, thank you all so much for listening to this episode. Make sure to subscribe to Friends of Fellow Citizens if you haven't already. Be sure to share this episode and the show with your friends and family as well. Have a great rest of your day and rest of your week. And remember, a day in America is always better when we are with our friends and fellow citizens.